My next guest is going to inspire and motivate you and get you to realize that no matter what you are dealing with in your life, you can overcome like he did. Brock Bevel is on the show. Brock is a husband and father of 7 children. He is a recovery coach and an advocate for those struggling with addiction. Brock has over 11 years of sobriety and 6.5 years working one-on-one with men and women who struggle with addiction. In 2001, while working as a police officer, Brock was involved in an incident where a mom was prostituting her daughter out for sex in exchange for drugs. During the incident, Brock was run over and sustained notable injuries to his ankle and knee. The injuries and surgeries from the accident led Brock on an extensive addiction to opioids. He openly shares his point of view of a life of an undercover cop who dedicated his life to the often dangerous and clandestine world of informants, drug dealers, and addicts. While working as a police officer, he shares his perception of those who suffer from addiction and alcoholism. Now, on the flip side, Brock did intend to become a drug addict, but nonetheless found himself in a knockdown, drag-out battle with opioid addiction, even turning to selling narcotics to feed his growing and out-of-control addiction. You do not want to miss this powerful episode with Brock Bevel, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Patrick here, host and creator of the top-ranked CJ Evolution podcast. Top-ranked because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for your support of the show and me over the years. If you would rate and review this show, give us that 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. We sure would appreciate it. And reach out to me at cjevolution.com. Big shout out and thanks to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, remember, you can accomplish anything you want in your life. I know you're serving right now, but I know you're probably dealing with a lot of issues and problems. Remember this, mindset is everything. As long as you have the correct mindset and the can-do, anything attitude, my friends, you will accomplish and overcome anything. You know, it's such an honor to be partnered with an amazing company like Detectachem. If you've never heard of Detectachem, head over to cjevolution.com, check out their link. They are helping keep our brave men and women who protect us every day safer by offering mobile threat detection that fits in the palm of their hands, detecting illicit drugs, explosives, now COVID-19. This application technology is a must-have for your organization. Again, check out their link at cjevolution.com. On to this powerful episode with Brock Bevel. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I'm very excited to have my next guest on the show, Brock Bevel. He's a former law enforcement officer. He's got an amazing story, and he's here to talk about it. Brock, how you doing, brother?
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me, Patrick.
Well, I appreciate it, man. And for those listeners out there who don't know who you are, what's your story, brother? Like I said, you're former law enforcement. You served admirably for a number of years, and fill in the gaps there, brother.
Yeah, you know, born and raised in Scottsdale, Arizona, grew up in a wonderful family, always wanted to be a police officer. I know most people, nobody says that anymore, but I went to my dad's closet one time and I saw he had a Mesa police uniform, and not knowing that he was actually a police officer before he took on his life as a full-time dad and full-time coach. And so bad. I was enamored by it and put the uniform on. I'm like, yep, this is what I'm going to do, you know? And then my life took a different turn. I ended up graduating from high school, went on a mission for 2 years. And then, when I had the chance, man, I'm like, let's do it. And I applied with 500 and I think it was 555 other people. And took the test, went about like everybody else. I did have an advantage living in Arizona, being Caucasian. I spoke fluent Spanish from living in South America for 2 years. So I think that kind of buoyed me up.
That's awesome. I mean, I know for, you know, officers that are bilingual or candidates, I mean, that pushes them up the totem pole, dude.
Yeah. Here in Mesa, there's a lot of Hispanic community, great people, but just when you're trying to solve a domestic violence and you can't speak their language, it's a tough situation. So we actually got paid more money for being bilingual here in Mesa on our check, which is really cool.
Yeah.
It took care of us.
Yeah, as you should. So you get on the force. What happened? I mean, you're doing your job, and what was the thing that really changed your life, brother?
You know, what's interesting is that I moved up fairly quick in the department. I started patrol like everybody else. And then I got into a specialty unit, which is our bike team. I worked narcotics and I just moved around a lot, man. I was totally blessed again because I spoke fluent Spanish and I was very good at infiltration, being maniacal, being a hell of a liar, you know, all these things that were good, that did me well as an officer in undercover work. And so I had two really telling situations. The first one happened January 27th. I got in a shooting with a guy that was, it was his fourth, fifth DUI, January 27th, 2 days after Christmas, gets in a full on pursuit, calls dispatch, tells me, you know, I'm going to kill the cops, back them off. Mm-hmm. So we ended up getting him kind of corralled in a cul-de-sac. He flips around. We do a felony stop on him. And you know, what's interesting is I wish some of those incidents could be recorded. You know, all we see now is like moments of what happens. But on this one, it was kind of a textbook situation. Guy gets out of his vehicle, police stop him. He has a knife. He threatens to kill everybody. So we go through the force continuum that everybody knows about, soft hands, hard hands, verbal commands. We taser him. We pepper spray him. The canine bites him. We beanbag him. All of this and nothing works. And then he gets back into his truck, throws that sucker in a drive, comes at my vehicle, and we shoot and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when we pulled him out of the vehicle, I was mad. I was angry. And I had never felt this emotion before, even as a police officer. I know we're trained fight to fight. You know, we're trained to be involved in these situations, but I never escalated to the point to where I was angry. And I was angry because I'm like, it's 2 days after Christmas and this dude made us kill him.
Yeah.
You know, like, where's his ownership on this? And then fast forward a couple months later, I'm in a deposition with his mom, his dad, and his sister. And, you know, we're in the round table and we're talking about the shooting, the lighting, the smells, all that stuff, you know, it brings back some of those emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But as we're wrapping up, mom's like, hey, Brock, Officer Bevel, can I ask you a question? And she says, if you had an opportunity to kill my son again, would you do it? Whoa, that's a pretty in-depth, you know, conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm a parent too, right? And I remember vividly taking some time to answer this correctly. And I said, I absolutely would have. I have to, because that's what I was trained to do, right? And he put himself in a lose-lose situation as soon as he got back into his vehicle and drove at us. So, yes. And that just caused a lot of emotional stir in my mind. We talk about this mental wellness, you know, your mental health. And that was a difficult time of my life. And then 4 months later, we get some street level intel. We're working street crimes. Prostitute tells us, hey, this lady is going to be bringing her daughter to this scene right here. And mom's going to trade the daughter for drugs. She's going to meet up with the drug dealer. They're going to do a hand-to-hand. Daughter's going to, I'm like, what the heck? And anyways, you know how it is. Street crimes, information never happens. It's never correct. It's doper standard time that we talk about. And it worked. We believed her. This truck pulls up, driven by a lady. The dope dealer comes up. He goes to get her out. And so we're able to get involved. Long story short, she ends up running myself and my partner over. I sustained a notable injury to my right ankle, tore my left knee out. That was kind of the start of my demise.
Yeah.
You know, a year. So I started the opioid treatment. I went to the doctor and I remember him telling me vividly, he was a great doc. This was my second go round with him from a previous surgery that happened on duty in a foot pursuit. And he told me, he goes, Brock, you'll never get addicted to this stuff. You're a police officer. You'll never get. And I remember that. I'm like, oh, okay. Is that like,
okay, how can somebody make that promise?
I don't know, man. And I just remember in my head thinking, I'm never going to get addicted to this stuff. A year later, here I am retired, medically retired because of my injuries. And he put on the paperwork, you know, that I'm no longer fit for duty.
Mm.
And that right there, I know we want to get into this mental wellness thing. I thought I was at the top of the world. I felt like my life at the time was like living a daily nitro circus. You know what I mean? Like the speed of what we were doing, the energy. And then I go into the boardroom and they're like, hey, Brock, we appreciate your service. Thank you for everything you've done. But your doctor's here says you're no longer fit for duty. You're a liability to the department. We're going to retire you.
Jeez.
So well, that's
you... Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. That was just a blow to my ego.
Oh, of course. I mean, this, that, you know, and I know, I mean, being a police officer, I mean, that's your identity. You know,
absolutely.
That.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you live and breathe for. And I didn't realize that until I retired, where I did it for 23 years. And I was like, I had some stuff I have to deal with because I didn't realize. I mean, in the back of your mind, you're like, okay, I'm a cop. But when you retire, you're like, I mean, it hits you. At least it hit me and it hit you. Now, did you get addicted? Were you addicted to opioids?
Yeah, man. Okay. You know what's crazy is my addiction started after retirement. Because when I was taking them in the department, I noticed that I liked them.
Yeah.
But I was trying mentally to get back to work. Mm-hmm. Once they said you're retired, man, I'm telling you what, you talk about the four big triggers in addiction: hunger, anger, lonely, tired. Mm-hmm. I had three of the four of those. I was angry, lonely, and tired. And I was like, where's my guys at? Where are my team at? Why, when I retire, do I have nobody checking on me anymore? I mean, yesterday we're chasing bad guys, shooting people, and we're doing, you know, high speed pursuits. And then you can't even check on me now. And so for me, that was a big blow. So I noticed that the more opiates I took, the less and less I thought about work.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Because now I had something bigger and better in my life. And it got me going. It got me off the couch.
So what was the catalyst, brother? I mean, what was the thing that said, because everybody probably has that, I know it has the aha moment. I'm shit. I can't keep going down this path. I need some friggin' help. I mean, what was the moment where you said, or did something happen where you said, I need to get help, man. I'm addicted to this shit. I need to get off it. I need to get on the road to recovery.
Yeah. I woke up one morning, went in my bathroom, taking my pill, opened my cabinet up. I look at my cabinet, all my pills are perfectly placed, take a pill, throw it in, shut the door. And when the door shut, the mirror shined into my bedroom. And I'm like, dude, you live in a crack house. It reminded me of the sights and smells. And, you know, you talk about those triggers.
Sure.
It came back like I'm living in a dope house. My house was a disaster. And yet my pills, my medicine cabinet, are in perfect order. So, Pat, this was the biggest mistake.
That's what you wanted. I mean, it was in perfect order, obviously. You were taking care of that stuff.
But here was my mistake, and I hope the listeners get this. A-type personality, it angered me. I'm like, dude, you were an addict. So I opened my cabinet, took every single pill bottle, dumped them all in the toilet, flushed it.
Good for you, brother.
And then I was like, oh, shit. You don't have anything right now. I'm thinking, okay, here we go. Detox process. I've been in withdrawals a little bit before, but I'm going to tell you, it was that moment. Like you said, there's that pivot point where you have to stand and make a decision. And I'm like, okay, here we go. This is it, man. You've been wanting this. Now you have a reason to stand. Let's go. And so that was where my beginning to recovery happened, was in my bathroom.
Wow. Well, I commend you, brother. First of all, thank you for your service again. And, you know, I mean, I just cannot believe your doctor would, I mean, everybody's different. You know that. Some people, you know, get addicted, some don't. I mean, you know how powerful this shit is. I know how it is. I mean, people, this is what makes people go, as you know, and the listener probably knows, go down the other road with heroin and all kinds of other shit. I mean, it's crazy. Now, what about, and I'm glad you're on the road to recovery, brother. I mean, thank God you're here. What about family? I mean, you came from, you know, did the family try to help you? I'm assuming, even though I hate to assume, that they tried to help you. And what was that component? What did that look like?
They didn't, because I didn't allow them.
Okay.
Because I had alienated them. So now my family, my personal family, I went through the divorce, right? I lost time with my kids because of the divorce, but my immediate family, I was a narcotics officer.
Yeah.
I was an undercover cop. So I knew exactly how to talk, what to say, how to pivot that, how to not let them see that I was struggling. Right. It wasn't until I started struggling until my wife and kids left me.
Wow. Yeah.
And then I was rock bottom.
Yeah. And then we, like, you know, brother, and you've heard this, I mean, there's only one way up, right? It's only one way out. That's up, right? Or the other.
That's it.
The other, you know.
Locked up, covered up, sober up. That's it.
Well, I'm proud of you, brother, and I know the listeners are. So, yeah, I wanted to hit a little bit about mental health. I mean, obviously, you were a police officer. You're still probably, you know, going through, you know, mental health. I mean, you know, problems and issues. I do too, brother. I mean, the stuff that I struggle with too. And I have a therapist, and I have, this is an outlet for me, brother. I mean, therapy for me, talking to amazing people like you. What, you were a police officer for a number of years. I mean, are we doing enough? I'm not talking about the addiction portion of it, but are we doing enough for our officers, brave men and women with mental health? Or what do you, from your lens, what do you think, you know, is going on there?
You know, I'm tired of reading in the paper or seeing on news that officers are committing suicide.
Yeah.
And they're getting addicted to drugs because of accidents or incidents that happen at work. I think we're doing better. I think departments are catching on and they're starting earlier to introduce some of the mental wellness aspects that we need. But the stigma's still in the house. The stigma's still in the briefing room. You understand this is like, man, I wanted somebody with some time on to raise their hand and say, well, hey, that call we went on last night, that's heavy. I'm struggling a little bit. Can we just, even amongst us, can we talk about it? Mm-hmm. But that stuff doesn't happen because as soon as you say I'm struggling, I can't work with that guy.
Yeah.
He's a liability to this place.
Or it's weakness.
It's weakness. Yeah. I can't have him as my backup. Come on, man. Listen, we just watched a baby burn. That stuff should affect us.
Yeah.
Right. But we don't talk about it because we're supposed to be this machismo and we're supposed to be these heroes, but come on, man, we're struggling. So to answer your question, to stick on topic, I feel like we're doing better, but we can do more. And this I'm seeing from my listeners and your listeners, it's getting out there and it's helping, but it starts also in the home.
Yeah.
Our spouses are the first ones to see it. And they, if I could give one invitation, it would be pay attention.
Yeah.
You see the red flags in your home first. You see the isolation, the depression, where all the hobbies start going away, where that individual, he doesn't trust anybody, doesn't want to go outside. Hey, listen, pay attention to that. It's okay to raise your voice, man. Talk about it.
Yeah.
For me, it's important.
That's great advice, brother. And like you, I mean, I made an assumption there, but from what I dealt with and still deal with, to some degree is, you know, I was really good at shoving my emotions down, you know, down deep, you know, just keep them down there. And there's only, and I'm speaking to the choir with you and probably a lot of listeners. There's only so much. We're not designed to see the trauma. We're not designed to see the human suffering that we see and the critical incidents that we go through. Before it starts bubbling up, and it will come up. I don't care how big and badass you think you are, it will affect you somewhere down the road. And like you said, brother, we got to get better at just raising our hand saying, I have a problem. I need some help. And I agree with you. We are doing better since when I got in. I remember you'd get into a critical incident, you'd do your paperwork and you're back on the street. I think it's getting better, but I agree with you, man. We need a lot more headway on this, and we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and I don't love, and this is like you said, our opinion, I don't love in-house support, peer support. I just feel like it's too close to the system.
I think it is, you know? Because people know you and stuff like that, obviously. So it needs to be outside, or my opinion.
And if I come to you and say, listen, I'm an alcoholic. I'm struggling mm-hmm. with alcohol abuse at home. I'm able to come to work. I'm able to do my job, but at home, I'm drinking heavy. I'm screaming at the wife. Well, now that gets documented in-house. And so for, in my opinion, for us to get better at it, officers, first responders, whatever, they need to have a little break from my personal life into work life. And that's one that I hope gets better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, I tell people, Brock, and I'd love your opinion on this. I mean, that this is just the culture of law enforcement. And I'll get to my point is I remember being, you know, it starts in the academy. You can't trust anybody if they don't have a badge or they don't have a star. That's just the way I was taught, starting from the academy. That was groomed. That was the culture in my agencies. My last agency was a little better, but, and so you grow up with that and, you know, in your career, at least I did. And then that affects you too, because then you, like you said, you have this mistrust of everybody. And I remember learning a while ago, a handful of years ago, that most people are good, man. It's just that's that small percentage, brother. You know what I'm talking about. That's the reoccurring customers that we deal with, and that jades everything. And so you have a myopic view on life and people and stuff. And that affected me for a long time, but you're right. I mean, you got to have that balance, man. You got to take care of your family. You got to take care of your spouse and your kids. And, you know, I've learned the hard way in a lot of ways, but I agree, man, we got a lot of work to do.
Totally. That's interesting. That's an interesting take. You know, I wish we could take that same effect, things that we learned in the academy, outside of the academy, into our normal lives, you know. The trust factor is huge.
Yeah. And I know I've struggled with that a lot, you know, not as much as I do now, but what do you think? I mean, so what do you think some of the keys, you know, to if somebody, let me ask you this, brother. So somebody listening right now that is struggling, and I'm going to put up links, and please do not, you know, there's so much help out there, you know, brother, all you have to do is reach out and ask, and we'll put up links, you know, numbers and stuff you can call in the show notes if you're struggling with. But for officers or people just listening right now, what advice would you give them right at this moment that are struggling and dealing with issues, maybe addiction and other things that they're dealing with right now?
Man, the whole SARA model. So
scan,
analyze, respond, assess. What's interesting is we are so good at doing that with other elements.
Exactly.
The dope houses, the other people, but we don't ever take an internal look into ourselves. So what I would recommend is, man, step back, slow down, and analyze yourself. Like, scan who you've become, analyze your movement. Like, if you're not leaving the house anymore, if you don't trust people, hey, you stopped going to church, you stopped doing those hobbies that you love to do, take a step back, right? Reassess who you've become, because I can promise you the issue is you.
Yeah.
And we are a type personality, and we will go till the wheels fall off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how we're trained. We're never dead.
Yeah.
Right. I remember that philosophy in the academy where they give you that handgun and you go out there and you're so tunnel vision, the guy walks up behind you and shoots you, right? Oh, you're dead. And then I remember that, like, you're never dead. It's the same thing. Like, we will go until our addiction kills us, until we get arrested. And that's even what I see in addiction is the officers who come into my office. Most of them, their wheels have totally fallen off. They've gotten that DUI. They've struck a citizen or a spouse. And just, it's like, hey, it went too far.
Yeah.
They saw it coming. They saw the red flags, but they didn't have that courage to step up and say, hey, there's that hand, I need help.
Yeah. I mean, it's such great advice, brother. And you've been through it. And, you know, it's like, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this in the listeners, you know, it's the old, you get on a plane, the oxygen fucking drops. Who are you going to put it on first? You're going to put it on you, right?
Right.
So we're really good at taking care of other people, but you're exactly right. We got to take care of each other. We got to take care. And there's awesome people like you out there, brother, that people could reach out to. You know, and your contact information is going to be in the show notes. So if you're struggling right now, Brock, is it okay if people reach out to you, brother?
Please, man. Please. Absolutely.
Yeah. So let's kind of pivot a little bit, if you don't mind. What advice would you give anybody right now contemplating a career in law enforcement? I thank God, I think there's still people that I know because I teach and I have students that are still talking about it. But what advice would you give somebody out there, brother, who is, who wants to get into law enforcement right now, or maybe came to you and said, Brock, you know, hey man, you did it for a while. You were running and gunning. It sounded like a good time. What advice would you give him?
Be a firefighter. They only work 4 days, right? Everybody loves them. You still get to have a badge.
Yeah, exactly. They play Nintendo and, you know, Xbox and shit when they, before they. Yeah, you're right. I mean, they have.
Yeah.
A knock on firefighters, by the way. If there's any firefighters, we love you. We love you.
We do, man. That's a good question because I get asked that a lot. Would I do it again? I absolutely would because there are sheepdogs out there. You know, we are sheepdogs. And I felt like I was doing my best. I felt like I was protecting. It was a calling. I loved it. And if you're moved that way, I recommend that you do it. But I do recommend that you have some accountability checks, some self checks, that you get into it for the right reason, that you're getting in it to help people, that you have to understand it's not a lifestyle, right? It's your job. And I think that's where a lot of us crossed the line is it became an identity for us. That was all we wanted to do was arrest bad guys. And we forgot about our families. We forgot about what made us great. And it takes a little bit of time to get that back.
Yeah. That's great advice, my friend. Let's pivot one more time. Let's talk about you're the director of operations for Chase the Vase. Talk about Chase the Vase, brother.
Yeah. You know, thank you for asking, you know, so when I got sober, I have 11 years of sobriety today.
That's awesome.
And thank you. And I really wanted to help law enforcement, firefighters, first responders, but I realized they couldn't go to rehab. They couldn't take 30, 60, 90 days away from home, right? To come to a facility to get help. Some can, some are forced to, but most, like we talk about that pivot point. Most of us just need a place to stand. So what I've done is I've created a 30-day challenge. I've created a 60-day challenge and even a 90-day challenge for law enforcement, for first responders who can come into the program. We meet together every morning. We brief. I give them a challenge. They go work the challenge for 24 hours, come back, we debrief. So you're finding recovery within a group of men and women who are like-minded individuals to where we identify triggers and cravings. We go through the Sarah model. We do have you do a search warrant on yourself. Like, that's how awesome. Is someone going to infiltrate you, man? Yeah. Like, what's my weaknesses? I want to know. Is it through pornography? Is it through the addiction? Is it through my anger? What is it through? So I really, bring it to the person's home so they don't have to leave. And they can find out all about it at www.chasethevasechallenge.com.
That's awesome. I love the search warrant on yourself, man. I just took some notes. That's pretty cool, man.
Steal
I love
it,
that.
Man. Yeah.
I love that analogy.
You can steal that and use it.
No. That's yours, brother.
I love it.
I said, wow, that's pretty friggin' awesome, man.
But think about it. As law enforcement, we're really good. We're technical.
Yeah.
Right. Actually tactical in those approaches, but we never check ourselves.
Yeah, you're exactly right, my friend. So if people want to reach out to you, mention your website, that's going to be linked up in the show notes. Can they find more about you there? I know you got a LinkedIn profile. Any other ways that people can reach out to you, brother?
Yeah, they can email me at chasingthevase@gmail.com. They can, my email that talks more about me, or not email, but my website is ChaseTheVase.com. That's to learn about what Chase the Vase means, who I am, what I've gone through, my story, just like we're doing here, trying to talk to people about it and give them some light and hope, man.
Well, Brock Bevel, brother, it has been an honor talking to you, man. I congratulate you. Thank you again for your service. I can't tell people that enough, especially Leo's. I'm going to tell you that. We're glad you're here, brother. We're glad that you are sober. If there's anything I can do for you, my friend, please reach out to me. You have my contact information. And any final thoughts, really quick, before we wrap up, brother? Anything you want to tell the listeners before we wrap up?
There's hope. There's hope.
All right, brother. Thank you so much, man. It's been an honor.
Absolutely. Thank you, brother.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.